Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with a very special guest, Reed Masterson from Masterson's 21st Century Magic. It's been a pleasure to have you on here, Reed. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. How's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. So what have you been doing lately? I know that last I saw you, gosh, it was almost 6 months ago now at a charity benefit for Post Town.
Yeah. That was a fun event. We had a good time. And what have we been doing? Nothing. That's it. We don't do anything. So we just twiddle our thumbs and just you know, stare at the clouds. I don't know. No. We work 24/7, man. So it's like, what have we been doing? There's just we're constantly changing the show around. We're constantly traveling. We do about somewhere between 40 and 60,000 miles a year, and we do about 150 shows to 200 shows a year. So it really just varies, and it's a 24/7, 365 job, so we never really stop. So it's I've got three computers running right now, and I'm multitasking. So
it becomes a part of the field, I think, in anything you do when you're in entertainment to multitask. I know that even when I'm doing this radio show, believe it or not, I'm doing video editing. I'm actually looking through existing audio files and doing a half a dozen other things. Consistent work, I guess you could say. It's all a part of the process.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what got you into magic. I mean, magic is a wonderful thing. Magic and illusion is, I've been fascinated with it since I was a kid. So what really got you interested in it?
I think every kid's interested in magic in some way, shape, or form. I mean, anything that's seemingly impossible, you know, is interesting to anybody for that matter. But I don't know. As a kid, I had an uncle who did little magic tricks, like nothing. He wasn't. You wouldn't really call him a magician, but he was like your grandpa that does, you know, that one card trick or something. But he would like put a penny in his ear and pull it out the other ear and make a quarter disappear. You know, he had just little random things he pulled out of his pocket, but nothing, you know, nothing too extensive. But when I was super young, I was like, I guess I was about five when he started really, really kind of showing me stuff a lot. And I'd go over to his house and he would show me all this stuff. My uncle's one of those. He's one of those guys. He's I think he's like 73 or something now. But he's one of those guys that he's a storyteller, you know. So like, you know, the fish was a lot bigger than it actually was. In most cases, there wasn't a fish to begin with him. So he's one of those people that you know, he loves telling stories. And when I was a kid, he everything he did was real magic. You know, he was like some sorcerer or some wizard or something. You know, he had some kind of powers for some reason, trained in India. I don't know. He did all kinds of weird stuff. And I knew he was a liar. I mean, that's what it boiled down to. I was like 5 years old, and I knew he was totally yanking my chain. So I would go home, and I didn't have the interest in magic to like do magic, but I just wanted to prove that he was a liar. So I would go home and I would try and come up with ways to do these magic tricks. And once I figured out how I thought he did it, I would go back, you know, next time I seen him, and I'd show him, you know, the previous trick that he had shown me. And if I figured it out, he would totally tell me that I figured it out. And then if I didn't figure it out, he would be like, hey, that's not how I do it, but you come up with your own way to do it. So that's pretty awesome. And then once I hit about, you know, 13 or something, I started teaching him stuff. So And I've been interested my whole life. So when I watched TV shows, magic TV shows when I was a kid, and I actually saw a show on TV when I was, I guess, around six, somewhere between six and seven, and it was called The World's Greatest Magic. It was hosted by John Ritter. I love John Ritter. So and I was at my great aunt's house, and my great aunt had pulled out the TV guide. And she was like, hey, there's a magic show on. And of course, you know, 6-year-old or whatever, you know, of course I want to watch a magic show. So they pull you know, we pulled up the show and we're watching it, and I'm sitting there on the floor, you know, like just dazzled. And there was this duo act on there. They were called the Pendragons. It was Jonathan and Charlotte Pendragon, and they took 25 Las Vegas showgirls and they stacked them up on these like risers, kind of like when you go to like a school choir performance. So like they have those like those tiered risers that you stand on. So they had 25 girls that stood on these tiered risers, and they were pretty high. Like by the time it was done, they were like, I don't know, 50 feet off the ground or something. So it was a pretty tall thing. And they lifted this curtain up in front of them. And as soon as the curtain, like as it, the risers like got smaller as they went up. So by the time you got to the top riser, there was only one person standing on top, and they were all waving, and it, you know, it would pass their hands. And once it got to the top girl, as soon as it went above her, the tip of her fingers, it dropped and they were all gone. And they were all in the back of the audience. And at that moment, I was like, holy moly, you know, like this is, I gotta figure out where I can learn these powers, because I thought that was real back then. So like, I was like, hey, you know, I gotta figure this stuff out. That's what I want to be a wizard or magician or whatever when I grow up. So that's kind of how it started.
That's an amazing story though. It's, some of the best, people, I guess, in the industry, you start at a young age, and you usually start by that fascination, like you said. And hey, I want to learn how to do this. I want to be this. I want to figure it out. That's something to be respected and honored, I guess you could say, in a lot of ways. Yeah, at a young age, you've done a lot of what we do in the paranormal on a regular basis. You learn to debunk, I guess you could say, to create new avenues yourself. And that's an amazing thing to do at a young age. To be able to pick up that talent quickly is really cool.
Yeah, I kind of grew up fast as a kid, so I didn't have your typical childhood. So I was more intuitive and whatnot, I guess, than not to say that kids aren't intuitive, but I was more. You know, I built stuff as a kid out of wood, and I was very much an interactive kid versus, I didn't grow up in a technological age. So I grew up more, you know, just a lot faster. And, you know, we didn't have very much money as a kid. So I didn't have, you know, all the fancy toys, and I didn't even see my first computer till I was like 16 years old. So like, I didn't even know what the internet was or anything. So like, I learned a lot as a kid, you know, I was a learner. So
I shouldn't giggle about that, but I can relate. I think the first time I saw a computer, I was almost 18, and it was an old computer. It was one of those things, you know, big model, plug it in. You still had the dial-up internet.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how most kids today actually grow up on technology. They have wireless phones. They have all kinds of things. Me, nope. I was playing in a pond.
Yeah, that was the same thing. Me, pond, tree houses, climbing trees, you know, like, you know, riding my bike, you know, whatever, fishing, you know, I you know, building stuff, you know, I asked for empty cardboard boxes one year for Christmas so I could build all kinds of stuff out of empty cardboard boxes. Like, that's what I wanted. So I build my own stuff.
The old-fashioned fort out of cardboard boxes.
Oh, yeah.
The bigger, yeah, the better. So, being a magician and an illusionist, you spend a lot of time, like you said, on the circuit, and you probably go to many, many conventions. I know we actually met in a paranormal convention. What's your take on the paranormal, I guess you could say?
Well, you know, Chris, it's a weird question. Oh, it's not a weird question. It's a good question, but like, I don't know what my answer is. I actually started out. I was in the paranormal world for a good while. I worked with a few of the big name guys before they were big name guys. Zach Baggins, and Ghost Adventures before Ghost Adventures became Ghost Adventures. You know, so all those guys, and I worked, you know, with some people. You know, back when, you know, Ghost Hunters, you know, the show first came on. I worked with, you know, a few of the lower name guys on that show before it became, you know, huge, you know, massive show. And I was in the paranormal for a while. I had an agent that was in the paranormal, booked us. I worked with Austin Porter. There was a show called Factor Faked. He was he was represented through my agent, and but I didn't plan to really get into the paranormal like I did. It started out as, you know, I wanted to hunt ghosts, and I've been interested in ghosts since I was a kid, you know. So like I spent my entire life growing up, like I said, in a non-technological age. So one of my favorite things to do was to, for lack of better words, break into old creepy houses. And you know, I wasn't breaking in. I wasn't like causing any problems or whatever. But you know, the old abandoned farmhouses that nobody's been in 30 years, and they're falling and decrepit, and they're obviously haunted. Look at them. You know what I'm saying? Like when you're a kid, they got to be haunted. There's no way it's not haunted. Look at it. It should be on Scooby-Doo, you know, like, so that's, I loved Scooby-Doo as a kid, and, you know, I went around and I explored all these old, just creepy, you know, the places that kids don't go, you know, where, you know, and I got really interested in it. And then when the paranormal scene hit TV, I started working with some paranormal guys out of Kentucky, and, before it became huge, and we developed a group, and we were around, we did a lot of stuff. We had an online chat forum, and we used to host public investigations, and we did all this stuff. And that's kind of how I got my start in the paranormal, with doing paranormal and whatnot. And then I got out of it because I started doing magic pretty much full time. And I got out of it so far that now when I'm back in it, I don't even know what it is. Like, I don't know what any of this, like I had a tape recorder and, you know, an actual camera with real film. And, and, you know, like, I don't know what, you know, I'm seeing stuff now that's, this machine's got purple crystals on top of it, and lasers are getting shot in it, and like all this stuff's beeping and smokes. I'm like, man, you know, Ghostbusters is not a real thing. You know, that's a movie, but this looks like some Ghostbusters stuff. So my take on the paranormal, I don't even know what it is anymore, to be completely honest with you. And, so like in terms of like, you know, ghost hunting and whatever, I don't know.
There is a big difference between the good old days. I just had that conversation and was speaking in a university about that about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. There's a massive difference between the good old days of paranormal investigation and study and what's going on today. There's a lot of different gadgets and a lot of different things out there, and they do look pretty. They're awesome. They catch a lot of attention from people, but it is a bit confusing and sometimes makes you kind of go, I don't know what I'm seeing here.
Well, see, you know, I've been on a few things with I went, like I said, with that event at Post Town. We were supposed to make an appearance or whatever with like the public hunt or whatever it was that night. And I went with a group of people, and I don't even remember who it was, but we were all talking and whatnot. And like, I see people using their, you know, they pull out their iPhones, and you know, all of a sudden people got radars on their iPhones and little dots are popping up like, oh my gosh, there's a ghost over here. Look, it's on the radar. And I'm like, you know, I just don't know, you know, like if your phone's really a radar or not. And I don't know if ghosts show up on it. You know, like I don't like, you know, I'm just saying, like, but that's like people legitimately are like, yes, this is it, man. I've got ghosts. Like I see them, like it's, and I'm like, you know, I'm a magician. You know, that's what I get paid to lie for a living. You know, like that's. And this just seems like total bogus to me. Like I just don't, like I wouldn't trust it. So like, and you know, and I know, you know, so that's me though. I don't know, you know, if that's, I don't know.
Well, no, it's a very, it just very seems, valid thing to,
seems
to,
weird.
And it's a very valid thing to bring up. I've had the privilege of, talking to early application creators of some of the more famous pieces that are out there, and they are designed for entertainment. If you actually talk to the application creators, they'll tell you that they're designed for specific purposes, almost like being an illusionist. It's to entertain. So I fall in the same category with a lot of applications when it comes to telephones and so forth. I understand the premise behind them and I respect the premise behind them, but there, I can see where your point is on that. It's one of those things, you like, you know, I'm just not quite convinced that a ghost can communicate on your phone.
Well, I think it's just, I guess my biggest, like the negative outlook, I guess I kind of see is just seeing how gullible the whole world is, you know, like, you know, with doing magic and whatever, it's great, but like everybody believes everything. So, you know, like it's like, you know, at one point in time, every dust particle in the world was a ghost, and that kind of went away. And now it's every, you know, people, you look at these, you know, I go to these conventions periodically and whatever, and I see people and they'll pull up like they got 8 apps on their cell phone and it's like and they're 100%, you know, like there's no telling them that it might be fake or that maybe that's not accurate or maybe, you know, like, or, you know, so that's kind of, you know, people believe anything and like it's weird, you know, it's kind of like a psychic thing. You know, I'm not saying psychics aren't real, but like Sylvia Brown, for instance, you know, I mean, she was proven to, you know, she was like the most prominent psychic in the world for years. And, you know, then she was proven to be a fraud, but you know, it's so convincing to these people. And it's the same, it reminds me of the same thing, but this is just an app on a phone, or it's just some kind of weird thing that lights up with multicolored LEDs and supposedly it's catching something. And I don't know what it is, but I don't follow any of this stuff, but it reminds me of how just easily taken back or easily just, you know, convinced people are. Like and I'm one of those people, I guess, like I said, I grew up more intuitive and whatever. So like, I look at things, I'm like, I don't understand why people are so just like, you know, there's 100% to them. There's no questions asked. Like, who proved it to you? Like, how do you know? You know, like, how do you know? Like, I don't know. So
you got to tear it apart a little bit. That's part of what we're going about with our new documentaries for Generation Truth is we're really digging into those questions a lot to show the public, I guess you could say, the reality behind applications, devices. You really got to dig into this stuff if you're truly into learning paranormal study and science. In the generation I grew up in, most of the people I grew up with were before the TV shows. So when you didn't have your average ghost hunter doing what you did, you know, just going out to a haunted house in Timbuktu somewhere, you had a university and they were literally doing that. They were breaking it down with equipment that was way over my head. It's still way over my head. But, you know, that's something I think a lot of people lack today. The public is open to it more because the shows have been on for so long. But really, you got to dig in. You can't just. I know that people love to do this, and listeners, I know you love to do this a lot of times, but, you know, in order to really understand, you have to ask those questions. I'm the guy that likes to tear things apart, though. I've been a tech guy for years, so.
Well, that's you me.
You give me something, you rip it apart, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, it seems like everybody in the, you know, it's. Everything's so accessible now that nobody has to do any research or anything. It's just like, yeah, go turn this on, set it in the room. Yeah, if it lights up, it's a ghost. You know, like, okay, let's do it. You know, like, and it seems like, you know, I've met a lot of people, and I'm not, like, even trying to say anything bad about people or anything like that, but everything's so in your face and technology's so just advanced now and everything's just in your pocket and you don't have to think about anything anymore. And that's kind of me with all this stuff. I'm like, you know, this is weird stuff, but again, I'm not in the field, so I don't know much about it. So,
well, I've learned from speaking to most of the people that have been in the field for quite a long period in time and studying alongside them that it's nice to have all the technology, but unless you really want to spend $20,000 to $40,000 creating a lab that probably won't get you very many results, your best goal when you're studying the paranormal is your instincts and old school items anyway, because digital cameras and night vision cameras and all that other stuff, most of this stuff was created for specific reasons that have nothing to do with the paranormal. Like night vision was designed to see in the night, yes, but it was applied to the paranormal so that we could have good TV shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, they're not like it's like that's another thing I always thought too. Like it's ghosts aren't. I mean, if you know, if the ghosts are walking around, they're not just walking around in the dark. You know, they're not waiting to come out of the closet in the dark. So you don't, you know, if you can see in the day, and it would make, like, if night vision would make you be able to see them in the night, then you should be able to see them with your bare eyes in the day. That's kind of my thought process on that.
Yeah.
So like, but hey.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. Well, let's get back into your career a little bit. I know we got sidetracked, but you know me and the paranormal. I'll talk your leg off about it for years. you tour all across the United States, of course. let's talk a little bit about some of your more memorable tours that you've done. Some of the things that have kind of sunk in that's like, you know, I really enjoyed this one.
You know, it's another hard one. You know, we've done so much, and we've never been on a, I guess you'd say, a specific tour, like a tour that, you know, like some 6 month tour for, you know, 20 cities or whatever. You know, it's kind of just a never ending thing. We've never been on some specific thing where we sold out a specific tour or something like that. But, in terms of shows and opportunities and stuff, you know, we've been on a lot of TV shows, but nothing like not America's Got Talent, not anything that people remember or know, or, you know, and it may have just been a clip or something. But, like, you know, we've done interviews on just about every TV network you can imagine. We've performed live on every TV network you can imagine. So we've done just about everything in terms of that. But so we really like, you know, we like the TV stuff. That's always fun. We've shot a couple documentaries for different things. We shot a big thing for A&E that were technically not, you know, I'm allowed to say I shot a thing for the A&E, but I'm not allowed to say if, you know, what it was or whatever. But that was super fun. That was up in Springfield, Illinois. But in turn, I guess more memorable things, you know, probably one of my biggest things, which doesn't matter to the real world, I guess. But, you know, we started out, you know, I started out in this young, you know, I started doing magic. You know, I really wanted to start when I was six. And then by the time I was like 12, I started actually doing magic shows, like in my living room for like the neighborhood kids and adults and whatnot. And then when I was 16, when I was 16, I actually put together an actual show and started doing birthday parties and whatnot. So I started competing in my local, like our high school talent contest and doing all that. And you know, it built up over the years, as you know, it's kind of just a kind of a snowball type thing. Just like in the paranormal, you have magic conventions. So any aspect of anything in the world, you have a convention for it. So, you know, if you want to sell sausage, you have sausage conventions, you know. So, like, I mean, it's the truth. I had somebody contact me to do a show for a sausage convention. That's why I use that reference. But so, like, when we have magic conventions, when you go to these magic conventions, you have competitions, and you have two different competitions at these magic conventions. You have stage competitions, and then you have close-up competitions. So people that do, you know, like close-up coin tricks and card tricks and just all kinds of, you know, close-up in your face kind of stuff. And these people are phenomenal. I don't really do the close-up stuff that much. I do a little bit here and there, but not enough to compete in a competition. But I've always been a stage guy. I've been a stage guy my whole life, and I do big illusions. And so when Ashton and I first got together, we started going to competition or a convention down in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. I've been going there since I was 16. But we started going down there. We started competing together, and we lost every year. We never even placed. But until the last year, and then we got first. But we won first place this competition. And what I'm getting to is, long story short, is after all those years, you know, competing and going around and doing all this different stuff, that same convention, you know, called us this year and said, hey, you know, you guys are doing awesome. You know, y'all used to compete here all the time. We'd love for you to come and headline one of the shows, because they do a Friday night and a Saturday night gala show with all the big time magic stars in the industry that we all know, that not necessarily you would know, but not necessarily mean they're on TV, but for us, they're celebrities. And they asked us to come and headline the show this year. So it was kind of like a full circle deal. You know, it was super great for us. So that's one of our most memorable things. In terms of that, you know, we got invited to do a show in Vegas, year or so ago, I think, and we're trying to work that out. We haven't actually performed, but we went out there and met with the theater, and we're trying to kind of work out a tour situation with that, to kind of go out, which will also include the Magic Castle in Hollywood, but that hasn't happened yet, so that's cool. I think probably our biggest thing, and it one of my kind of the story of how we got our start together as a duo. You know, Ashton and I met in 2008, and we met in January 2008. And then we did our first show in October of 2008. And at that point in time, I was still in the paranormal world, doing my thing paranormal-wise pretty heavily. And we had done a public investigation with all of our like online forum members. I had like 40 or 50 people come to this public investigation. And it was at a theater actually in my hometown, but I'm not a hometown boy, so nobody really knows who I am. So it's, if you're listening, you'll know, but, it's in Cynthiana, Kentucky, so it's kind of where I was born and raised. But there's an old theater there that's supposedly haunted. It was classified like the third most haunted building in Kentucky or something like that. But anyways, we were doing it's called the Roz Opera House, and we were doing a public investigation there. And one of my team members at the time said, hey, he went to the theater owner and he's like, hey, you need to hire this guy to do a magic show. He's awesome. Well, what's funny about it is at that point in time, my team member had never even seen me do a magic trick ever. So like, he just knew that I did magic tricks. That's it. He had no clue anything about me really. Like he told this theater guy that, and the theater guy gave me this big long story about how they hired a magician in the past and he was super terrible. And they ended up having like 50 people show up or something like that. And people were complaining and blah, 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 blah. It was just a big horror story. And they didn't really know if they wanted to hire another magician and all this stuff. And I was like, well, hey, that's cool. You know, that's whatever. And he's like, but, you know, he's like, maybe you can show us something sometime and whatever. Maybe we can work something out. So I was like, okay. So I ended up going down there and auditioning for him. I went down to the theater and I did one trick. I just did one thing for him right in their lobby. Like it wasn't on stage or nothing. And they were like, well, that right there was better than this guy's whole show. So if you can extend that to a bigger show, you know, then we'll do something. And this was like in June of like 2008. And then next thing I know, they're calling me and they're like, hey, you want to do a show in October? And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, and at this point in time, we didn't have a show. Like, Ashton had never even been on stage. I hadn't asked Ashton to do anything with me. Like, it wasn't even a thought. Like, I was working a real job, you know, quote unquote. And Ashton, you know, I went home and I told Ashton, I was like, hey, you want to, you know, be my assistant in the magic show? And it's going to be October 23rd, by the way. And we got to put together this whole show. And, she said, yeah. And we didn't have a show. We didn't have money. I had $1,500 and we took $1,500 and we built a bunch of illusions out of cardboard, duct tape, PVC and spray paint. And that's no joke. Like it was the cheapest illusion show you've ever seen in your life. And it was only 45 minutes long. We sold the theater out and it was amazing. And then we ended up, we worked at theater for 7 years in a row, sold it out every year. And then we took off for 2 years and traveled more extensively. And then we came back last year and we did a show there again. And then we'll be there again this year in November. So that's kind of like it's the paranormal transition kind of into magic for me. And that's kind of how that happened. But I don't really know. Like, everything I do is so memorable. Like, I remember everything. I love everything I do. And I don't really know how to pick one over another. So it's – I really – like, we just love performing. And like I said, we do, like, 150 shows, 200 shows a year. And it's just everything we do. You know, we usually don't really have a bad time. You know, it's always – it's we love it all, really. So it's hard to – it's hard to pick, you know. Like I like doing the paranormal stuff sometimes. That's pretty cool because it's not common, you know, a magician doing magic shows at a paranormal convention. We did headline the Scarefest Horror and Paranormal Convention for 9 years straight. So those were always really memorable because we used to hang out with all the celebrities. We were treated, you know, we were like the celebrities. So, you know, I used to have lunch and dinner and stuff with all those, you know, Kane Hodder, all the Friday the 13th guys. I know them, you know, go talk to them whenever. I ate Chinese with Sid Haig from Devil's Rejects one time. So that was cool. He was a super down to earth guy. So all those type of times are really memorable. And then we've done quite a few big Comic Cons, you know, some 30,000 people, you know, kind of conventions. So those are pretty big. So it's yeah, we've done so much, man. It's just so it's hard to really narrow it all down, but it's yeah, it's all memorable, I guess. I know it's not the answer you're looking for, but hey, you know, there's just something.
Oh no, I can relate a little bit, especially with the Comic Cons and some of the conventions, because I used to go to. I was a comic book artist for quite a number of years. Did side art for a lot of major comic book companies, so they're fun. You get to meet a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's a fun story. It's quick, short, but like as a kid, you know, I'm young. I'm not super old or anything. So it's I grew up in the very first Power Rangers era, so Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and that was for me. I loved that show as a kid. Never watched any of the other, you know, they're still going on to this day, just not Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, some other thing, but. There's a guy named Jason David Frank, and he played the Green Ranger, and he played Tommy, the Green Ranger. And when I did my first Comic-Con, I got to meet him and hang out with him, and which was like a dream come true, because as a kid, you know, he was like, you know, one of my idols. And he actually put me, I did a straitjacket escape. So he gathered everybody in like the convention center around his booth. We had like 800 people standing around his booth, and he locked me in a straitjacket, and I did a straitjacket escape for like 800 people in front of his booth at a Comic-Con. And it was, that was pretty memorable. That was fun stuff. And he filmed it with like a whole TV crew and everything. So they could posted videos of it and everything. So it was pretty cool.
He's a nice guy. Jason is a really cool guy. I know that I've met him twice now, and he's got a good personality to him. He's been through an incredible amount of stuff throughout his life after he left the Power Rangers show, but he made it. He pursued through it with a positive attitude, and I think the last time I saw him on social media was about 6 months ago, but he's still got that positive attitude when he pops in.
yeah, for sure. I haven't seen him in a while, but yeah, it's... He was a good dude.
Yeah, that's cool. That's neat. I know that you had mentioned a lot of different things, but one of the things that I think is really neat that you mentioned is how you started off very cheaply. I don't think a lot of people know that. You know, when you see an illusionist or a magician, especially on stage, like when you do your stage, you have a lot of lights and you have a lot of animals out there, and you're really great listeners. If you haven't seen them, you got to go see him. He's really great at what he does. His assistant Ashton is a very, very wonderful lady out there on stage. They really know how to present themselves to the audience, and you'd be amazed. But when you guys do all of that, you don't realize that a lot of times you do start off in the simplest means possible. Like you'd mentioned the PVC pipe and duct tape. That's really cool to know.
yeah, I mean, it's funny, man. It was wild doing our first few shows, because it was all PVC and cardboard. And our very first show, we only had one prop that was built out of wood, and you know, one of the guy that like built sets for the theater at the time built me this little table thing that a cardboard box set on this table. So he built this for me out of some scrap wood they had, and that was the only thing wood I had for years. And you know, our hobby, I would venture to say that doing magic is like one of the most expensive hobbies in the world. I don't mean that like against anybody else's hobbies, but like I've got like a bad frog in my throat. Losing my voice over here. Give me a sec. Oh, man. Okay. There we go. I think that's better. Run out of water. Anyway, so like, it's super expensive. Everything we do is super duper expensive. You don't realize it. And most of everything we do lasts only, you know, very few minutes. You know, for instance, I do a bird act. You know, I do a bird act in my show, and it lasts 6 minutes and 33 seconds. So that's you know, down to the exact second, 6 minutes and 33 seconds. I've been working on it for about 15 years, something like that, and constantly working on it all the time. So I'm changing it and updating it and just constantly trying to perfect it. But that act in itself is probably got in that 6 minute and 33 seconds, you'll probably see $10,000 worth of stuff. And it's crazy, you know, like, because it just doesn't seem like that, you know, like people are like, wow, you know, like, this is crazy. Like, we hired a new guy. Well, he's been with us for a year now, but we hired a guy and, you know, he was a fan of ours. So he used to watch our shows and he, you know, follow us on social media. And I mean, we've kind of known who he was for years, and we ended up hiring him last year to travel with us. And now he travels with us full time, but he gets to see the behind the scenes stuff. And he's like, this is crazy. You know, like, you know, we put a new illusion in the show last year. It's one prop. It's big, you know, it's like 8 foot tall by like 5 foot square, but it costs $4,000. And in no way, shape or form am I saying like that we are rich or anything like that. I'm not boasting about like we have like $4,000 is cheap magic. So like we're not like, but so it's all of my money that we make goes right back into the show. We don't get to go out to private islands or anything like that. But yeah, it's super duper expensive. And when we started out, there's absolutely no way we could do a show with my current job at the time and actually do an illusion show. So and when I say illusion show, like people don't really understand magician and illusionist. Really the only difference for us in terms of if you're in the magic world is just the size of your props. So illusionists do magic tricks with big props that are on stage, and magicians do magic tricks with little props that don't have to be on stage. It's pretty much that simple. You know, a magician can do an hour show out of a suitcase, and an illusionist does an hour show out of a trailer, you know, like, so it's that's really the only difference. And it's all super expensive, even the small stuff. So, I mean, there's things out that you just wouldn't believe, you know, how much the stuff costs. And our show, on the other hand, I'm very much into production. So I'm a tech guy. I love lights and sound. I compose music and I develop all this stuff. And I'm sitting here right now looking at a new case that I just bought for it's a whole production workstation. Just bought a new MacBook Pro 2018 and for the show that runs our whole show. It does everything for us, but it's all programming and editing and all this crazy stuff. It's super expensive, and all that's behind the scenes. Like, that's not even, nobody ever knows that any of that exists or how it works or whatever. But we're doing all kinds of stuff. I'm controlling lights while I'm on stage, or sound while I'm on stage. Ash controlling lights and sound. You know, you never know who's doing it or when they're doing it. It's all wireless and different things are going on. So it's a lot of pieces to the puzzle all going together all at the same time. And it's crazy how much it costs. So yeah, when we started out, we had no production value at all. We had no lights. No, nothing. The theater that we worked, it's an old theater, it was built in 1940, and they didn't have any lighting. They had green floodlights in the ceiling and then white floodlights in the ceiling. So I'm talking like the lights that the security lights that you plug into the outside of your house that you walk by and they turn on the big old lights. So they had green ones and they had white ones, and that was it. So at one point in time in our show, the stage was green. You know, and that was cool. Like, that was it. You know, that was the one time it was green, and that was the whole production of the show, and nothing else. You know, so, and now we can work pretty much any theater we want. We bring in all of our own stuff. Our show is a 4-person crew. It takes us about 9 hours to set it up, give or take, and then we do a whole show and we tear it down. It takes about 4 hours to tear it all back down, and then we get back on the road and go do the next one.
That's an interesting thing to bring up, though. I think a lot of people, when they see people like yourself and the shows, and of course they see on TV a couple of times and so forth, they assume that hey, these guys are on television at this point. You know, they're making a boatload of money, but I don't think they understand. A lot of times, when you're doing your passion, when you're working hard at it, even when you get those few spots that you're on TV and when you get into the major areas where you're actually on a stage, that doesn't mean you're making a lot of money. It just means you're enjoying your life and doing what you enjoy doing.
Yeah, pretty much, man. TV doesn't, like, unless you're a movie star, TV doesn't pay you in general. So, you know, you don't, you know, very seldom, you know, you might get paid to do you might get paid your expenses, you know, possibly to appear on like the Ellen DeGeneres Show or something, you know, or something like that, but you're not getting
you're not getting any money for it. You're just, you know, they'll put you in a hotel and maybe give you your food and fly you out there or something. But at the end of the day, you're going to have the same amount of money when you got home, you know, as you did when you left. You know, it's but it seems cool because, you know, people think, oh, man, you know, like that's not how it works with TV and whatnot. And like I said, I've been on a ton of, you know, I've been seen by millions of people on TV. It's that, you know, but it's nothing to anybody. Like, you know, it just allows me to put TV logos on my website and whatnot. You know, it's I don't have any major credits.
It's good to be on a resume, so to speak.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, we have that battle a little bit, and I'm a small guy, really. But since I got into production, and people assume that when you're putting together something that you're going to be putting out on the circuits, or you're going to be putting out in the conventions, or even if you're going to get a chance to present it on television through an agency, that you've hit the big time, and that's not the case. I don't think they realize we have to literally produce 5 shows, hand it off to the production company. If they like it, they can pitch it. And if we get really lucky and we're in less than that 1%, we might actually get on TV. And that's probably never going to happen.
Yeah, it's a big pond with a lot of fish in it, man. It's a constant battle no matter what in the entertainment industry, and that's the way it is for us too. You know, there's theaters all over the world, and you know the theater director is getting, you know, 10,000 emails a day, 10,000 postcards a day, all from different entertainers wanting something different at a different price. And if you just happen to be the one that they liked or whatever, then you might get chosen, you know, maybe, you know, you're lucky, you know, if you call them for 8 months straight, you know, they might finally answer the phone if you're lucky. So it's, you know, like it's you know, we have an agent, so, you know, it's for college. We work the college market, so it's, you know, we have an agent that books us colleges, and then we take care of everything else ourselves. So we do all the booking, all the everything, you know, from the ground up. If you get on our website, there's kind of a whole little bio section that pretty much explains, you know, this is us and this is what we do, and from the, you know, day one to day now, you know, it's us doing it all. It's, you know, we. Every bit of it. We don't have any kind of big production crew. You know, when we're on stage, you know, and you see our big show, it looks like it. You know, it looks, and that, you know, it's a good thing to portray, but people don't, you know, it's not what it, you know, it's a lot of work. I work way more, you know, the stage is the only vacation we ever get. So that's the only fun part of not saying that we don't, you know, we love what we do, but, you know, the rest of it is grueling and hour intensive. And, you know, I'm, you know, very sleep. I don't even know what that is most of the time. Like I said, I drive 40 to 60,000 miles a year. So it's like, I mean, that's, I'm a truck driver, you know, and I don't get paid truck driver wages. Let me tell you. So it's, they don't even pay my gas for me most of the time. So I'm paying, you know, truck drivers have their own gas and somebody else's truck, you know, most of the time. So
I wish I couldn't relate with that, but I can doing the doing the documentary. I think we're a little bit less than most because I have to manage my clinics and my marketing, and I have to speak at universities on top of that. But I can relate. We're at 6 months off and 6 months on now, and that's a handful in itself because you're always on the road. You don't get a chance to. I have a family, a wife and a kid. I don't get a chance to spend time with them. So I'd hate to see the way it is when you get to be the Grants and the Jasons out there for 5 or 6 years because they probably didn't have time to do anything.
Oh, yeah. No. It's crazy for what they, you know, what they do. You know, it's and same thing, you know, with the performers industry. You know, we don't have kids or anything. So it's – but, you know, we have friends that, you know, will go out on the road for 6 months and never come home, you know, never, not, you know, not a day off in 6 months. And we have friends that, you know, we've got friends that go overseas and they're gone all year, you know, that they don't ever step foot back in the country, let alone, you know, we've got, and it's a grueling thing doing the shows, you know, constantly. And it, like I said, we love what we do, but, you know, there's weeks, you know, we'll do 13 shows a week and all at different locations. So it's a long, it's a long, 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 long week. You know, we have 3 different types of shows, and we, you know, a 45-minute show, a 60-minute show, and a 90-minute show. And, And the 90-minute show is our full production theater show, and the other two shows are smaller, still not small, but smaller. But yeah, it's hard doing it, you know, and it's the same thing. You know, you do the same thing, you say the same thing. It's just, you know, and we do all this, and that's kind of how we live our lives, is the same thing every day. And then when we get done, we go to the hotel or back home or wherever it may be, and get on the computer and, you know, send out 100 emails and you know, send out a few contracts and, you know, send out a few tax forms and file this and file that and call this person and call that person and make sure the agent's up to date and then post some stuff on Facebook and Instagram and, you know, and try and keep all that up to date and whatnot. So we do like a 30-person job.
It sounds like it's quite a lot of work, definitely. Now, you had talked about something. I'm going to take a brief pause just so that everybody knows you listen to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is the largest digital radio station and the oldest here in the United States of America. I do encourage you, if you're going to go with a digital radio show or if you're going to do a podcast, go with the best. Go with BBS. Look up Donald. He's a great person. He'll take good care of you. Another brief announcement. Generation Truth will be doing August 26th, Ohio State Reformatory. We have filled up on there. However, we will be producing a little bit of a piece to give you some behind the scenes on how investigators and how the reformatory works. So make sure that you keep an eye out on that, because it's going to be a early release compared to some of the stuff that's coming out in 2023. We are listening to Reed Masterson, Masterson's Magic, 21st Century Masterson's Magic, I should say. We're going to get into here in the last 10 or 15 minutes where you can find the Mastersons and what they'll be doing here that he wants to promote. But jumping straight back into it before we do that, Reed, you mentioned something that I'm just curious to ask you on. I know I spent some time with some mentalists, which is a whole different type of show, but it's probably the same as magic. You'd mentioned you're continuously changing and timing everything. That probably takes a lot of work. I mean, I'm sure you probably time every piece of your act so that you know exactly how many minutes it's going to work, what needs to be changed, how you can incorporate that to make sure it works, and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, everything, especially in our big show, in terms of timing wise, our big show, all of our big illusions and you know, bigger pieces are timed and choreographed to music. So there's no room for error. So if it goes wrong, the music just keeps going, or, you know, if it's whatever, you know, there is no it's exactly, you know, every beat's counted, every step's counted. Do we know, I got to be at this spot? Every, like, if you looked at our stage, like if you actually looked at it from not the audience's point of view, from our point of view, it's just nothing but tape everywhere. So it's like this X here, this X there, this corner here, this corner there, this prop set's here, this prop set's there. You got to be over here at this point. You can't fall farther than this point, or you're going to walk out of the light. The light's going to move here, so make sure you're standing here, blah, 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 blah. So it's all, you know, You could watch our show 10 times in a row at 10 different places, and you would think you're watching the exact same thing. It's the same movements, the same words, the same sound, the same music, the same everything, just a different audience, and everything is timed. And then we have some stuff that we try and put as much variety as we can. So it's so there's things that aren't completely timed. We know that, okay, this is going to take somewhere between, you know, for instance, like audience participation stuff. We have some audience participation stuff that's kind of specifically timed, and then we have some that's a little more lenient. So we know that, okay, if we do this, it's going to take somewhere between 8 and 9 minutes. Well, you know, it's after however many years we've been doing it, it always takes between 8 and 9 minutes. It really just depends on the reaction of the audience. At any point in time, something could happen, and it could go longer or be shorter or whatever, but we have those kind of things, which allows for improv and things that aren't necessarily, which makes the show more more specific to, like, the venue and the audience and the you know, town or city or state or whatever it is we're in, and we're allowed to be more interactive versus completely scripted. You know, it's not just a movie. It's at one point parts of it are a movie, the other parts of it are, you know, a question and answer session, you know, so it gives you a little more variety in terms of that.
So let's talk a little bit about where the listeners can find you and anything that you want to promote here in about the last 5 minutes of the show. So that way we can get some more attention to your websites and your social media when you guys get a chance to interact, and we can get some people to watching you.
Yeah. They can, right off the bat, obviously, they can go to our website. It's just mastersonsmagic.com. So that's mastersonsmagic.com. If you type Master Sun Magic, it goes somewhere else. So type Master Sons Magic. And you can find everything about us on there. You can, you know, different types of shows we do, or, you know, corporate events, college events, theater shows, you know, all that good stuff. Our full tour schedule. Our tour schedule is updated based on, as a contract-based thing, so it's updated on once we receive a contract. So right now, if you look on there, there's not a there's quite a few dates, but not a massive amount of dates on there, I guess. But it could go from being like 15 dates today to 45 dates tomorrow based on contracts coming in. So it really just depends on how fast all that gets booked and whatnot. But they can see all of our public events and whatnot. They're on the website. And they can also follow us on social media, obviously. So if you just type at Masterson's Magic on anything, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, whatever, you'll find us. We do not have a Google Plus account, but yeah, at Masterson's Magic on Facebook and Instagram is the two main things. That's the two that we monitor 100%. Twitter has kind of fallen to the wayside. We still have it, and we still post on there some, but it's not as prominent as Facebook and Instagram. But you can still find us on all of those. You can also sign up for a newsletter. Like, if you go to our website, you can sign up for a newsletter, which we send out a monthly newsletter every month. It kind of recaps. It's kind of like a blog, I guess, but it's in a newsletter form that comes to your inbox, and we kind of recaps, you know, this is where we've been the past month. This is what we've done. This is, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is it. We take pictures with audience members. We post those in there. We do all that jazz and try to, you know, communicate and interact with the fans as much as we can that way. And yeah, that's about it. We do monitor our Facebook and our Instagram personally. So anybody that comments or anything like that on Facebook, we will respond most likely personally to everybody. We try to do that. So yeah.
Well, and before I forget about it, I didn't get a chance to do it, obviously. You just had a birthday here recently, so happy belated birthday.
Yeah, my birthday's on the 1st, and Ashen's birthday is actually on the 2nd. So her birthday was yesterday, mine was on Wednesday, so we celebrate that, which works out really well. I can't forget, so that's good.
Awesome. Well, you have to wish her a happy birthday for me, too. Listeners, next week on Paranormal Truth and Reality, we've got a fairly young investigator. He's decided to specialize. He's actually working on haunted items and doing research and study, believe it or not, in a studio that he's put together just so he can monitor these items. It'll be an interesting conversation. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality on BBS Radio with Reed Masterson and Dave Masterson's 21st Century Magic. We found a way to find the Mastersons. You'll find links located on my social media, Facebook, and my website. The show will be replayable in BBS in 24 to 48 hours, give or take. So by Monday, you'll be able to listen to the show again. And it rebroadcasts thanks to several connections I have here on many AM radio stations here in Ohio. So make sure that you tune in for the rebroadcast as well. Reed, I will say it's been a real pleasure having you on here. You're always welcome to come back if you ever have time.
All right, Chris. Thanks so much. It's been great. Great being on the show.
It's not a problem. I will end this the way we end it every single week, ladies and gentlemen. Just like in the paranormal, as you're learning with life or any type of career, that truth should always be the reality. So whether you're 6 years old, whether you're 12 years old, whether you're an adult, if you've really wanted to go for what you enjoy in life, don't be afraid to do it. Go out there, search for what you enjoy, take care of yourself well, obviously, and really shoot for those goals, because, you know, you may not make a lot of money at it, and who knows, you may make a lot of money at it, but you'll enjoy life a lot better. That's our show. I'll tell everybody, hey, enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.